Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati with you, joined as always by the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine. Carter, good evening. How are you, man?
Good evening, Nate. Doing well. Yourself?
Doing well. Getting ready for the home stretch. It's been the home stretch for a while, I guess. We're in the middle of the home stretch, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Five games remaining for Sporting Kansas City as they sit on 29 games played. They find themselves second place in the Western Conference on 51 points, 2 points behind FC Dallas for first place, 1 point ahead of LAFC for third place. By the way, two teams at Sporting Kansas City will still play in their final five games. Those two games, of course, will go a long way in determining the order of finish in the Western Conference. Three teams we feel pretty good will be in the playoffs when that time rolls around. But we will lay out the playoff scenarios for you in terms of what it will take for Sporting KC to clinch a franchise record eighth straight playoff appearance this coming weekend when they take on Real Salt Lake. We will also, though, look back to a frustrating, soggy, rainy day in Philadelphia on Sunday in which Sporting Kansas City lost to the Union by a score of 2-0. We'll talk about another firing in the Western Conference, and this time for a team that is still in the running for the playoffs. I guess, of course, the last firing wasn't technically a firing, but departure of a head coach was a team that's also in the playoff running. So some interesting moves in the Western Conference there, which we will talk about. We're going to visit with Brian Dunseth, our buddy from the Real Salt Lake broadcast team, to give us a preview of Sporting KC's big matchup against Real Salt Lake that is coming up on Sunday. First, Carter, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about this last performance by Sporting Kansas City. They fall to the Philadelphia Union by a final score of 2-0. Jay Simpson, the much maligned target allocation money signing by the Philadelphia Union with the two goals. I don't think that there's anything wrong for Sporting KC to lose a game against a pretty good playoff caliber team in the Eastern Conference like Philadelphia. But I think what would maybe leave Sporting Kansas City a little frustrated was the fact that that Union side was not their first choice side. They made 9 changes to their team. Still had a lot of good players out there, but 9 changes to their team from their previous game. And I think Sporting would have fancied their chances going into that game.
Yeah, definitely. When you look on paper and you see the lineup that they put out with one eye on the Open Cup final tomorrow, that, I think you could definitely say maybe a missed opportunity from that standpoint. Talking to Peter Vermees today at practice, and he said he just didn't think they were up for it on the weekend, and said that if they played another half of soccer, he wasn't sure that they would be able to score in that one either. So, just one of those games where on the road it's tough to play in MLS, and they just didn't show up. I don't think in the manner that they would have wanted. You were on the call. What stood out to you from the game?
Well, I didn't think that they seemed very ready to play at the beginning of the game. The first 10 minutes or so, they were under the cosh, as our buddy Matt Lawrence likes to say it. Philadelphia Union had Sporting Kansas City under pressure. Sporting was really struggling to establish that midfield possession that they were so good at in the San Jose game from the weekend before, and that we've seen for the majority of the season. But I thought as the game went on, they kind of found their footing a little bit. I thought they had the better of the chances to close out the first half. And the moment of the game for me was Gerso Fernandez missing the wide open net with his right foot after he was played through, clean toward goal. He did everything right except for the finish. He did all the hard stuff. He had a good first touch. He had his composure in the initial phase when the goalkeeper came out to close him down, touched it right around the goalkeeper, and he's staring at a wide open net. We all know that Gerso's favored foot is not his right foot, but when you're 6 yards away from goal and the goal's wide open, all you got to do is get your foot around it and it's a goal. And that changes the entire complexion of the game. But he kind of snatched at it. I thought he got a little anxious. He tried to blast it with his right foot and he smashed it into the side netting. And his reaction told you everything you needed to know there. Peter Vermees saying that they could have played all game and not gotten a goal. They had six shots on target in the game, and some of them were really good looks. They just didn't do anything with them, and that's not something I feel like we've said very often this year.
Yeah, that's been the big positive from this year, especially at the beginning of the year. It was crazy that the goal scoring rate there that they're on and the chances that they're converting. But that certainly has been a hallmark of the team from this season. It's why they have so many players, that have scored five goals, so many that have five assists, which hasn't been done in franchise history before. It's because these guys have been pretty clinical all season long, and so maybe it's just a case of the shooting boots weren't there on this particular day.
For me, that was the biggest storyline in the game, because at the end, you look at it and you say, well, Sporting conceded two goals. Well, after they gave up the first, they really started to pile numbers forward, and we all know that that's the result sometimes, is that you're going to leave yourself exposed in the back for a potential second goal. The first goal came from a set piece. The ironic part to me was Sporting Kansas City, in my estimation, were absolutely dominating the second half. Up until that goal, they were getting the better chances. They had the possession. They were dictating the game the way we're used to seeing Sporting Kansas City do. Their best chance in the second half came courtesy of Felipe Gutierrez with a header that I think he did everything right on as well. He didn't get as much power on it as maybe he would have liked to, but he snapped it down. He snapped it back to the far post. It was a great fingertip save by McCarthy. So I can't really blame Felipe Gutierrez in any way for that. But you have all those chances. You dictate the proceedings. You don't have anything to show for it. You expose yourself to that one set piece, knockdown ball, and Simpson just turned, and it was a simple finish to basically change the entire game. So I'll be interested to see for Sporting KC where Peter Vermees goes from here from the attacking trio standpoint. We've talked about Gerso being in really good form. He had three shot attempts in this game and didn't take any of them well. That's just the harsh truth of it, and everybody can have a bad game. I thought Daniel Shallowy showed some things when he came into the game. I'm wondering if Daniel Shallowy works his way back into the rotation a little bit as we get ready for the home stretch now and the international duty's over for him. Johnny Russell started this game, played 72 minutes. Diego Rubio did not play. We find out he's taken a bit of a knee injury. I don't know if you have any insight for us, Carter, on that from being out of training today, but that's certainly something we're going to be interested in seeing how serious that is, because he was not in the 18 and did not travel, and that means that Christian Namath played all 90 minutes up top. He had four shot attempts but couldn't find the back of the net either.
Yeah, and that's going to be really interesting to see the rest of the season as well. It was open training today. Diego was out there, but I guess, yeah, I don't really have a status update for him if he'll be available this weekend or not. We'll have to keep our ears open for that, because that will be, yeah, like you said, a big question mark. And I'm curious, yeah, if we're going to see a Gerso, Namath, Russell front three again this season, or, maybe some things starting to get changed up top. And we've talked about it a few times over the past couple of weeks with guys coming back healthy. And from international duty, there's different types of players. And so maybe a home game against RSL, you play a little differently than having the speedy Russell and Gerso on the wings away from home. I'm not sure, but I'm definitely curious to see what Vermees decides to go with against RSL, who you figure Sporting will have a lot of the ball against them.
Yeah, and for Sporting KC, this situation of taking care of home games, I think, is going to be of the utmost importance when it comes to playing for their seeding. I hate to say it, but I think any hopes that we were harboring of Sporting KC maybe staying a dark horse contender in the Supporters Shield race, or even really for the second overall seed in the MLS playoffs. That's kind of what I had my eye on, was maybe they can keep pace with the New York Red Bulls, and if something happens and they end up facing that team in the MLS Cup final, that game would be on home soil. I think those hopes kind of went away when they dropped all the points in Philadelphia. New York was able to go get a road victory, and of course, the train just keeps going for Atlanta United. They look like they're going to run away and hide from everybody. They might break the record that was set by Toronto FC last year of 69 points in a regular season. They're on 63 points, and they've got four games to go. If they win all four, they would smash the record. If they win three and draw one, they'll beat the record. So it's and would you rule it out at this point? Atlanta plays New York Red Bulls next. The Rebels are going to be without Bradley Wright Phillips because of a very questionable yellow card that happened this weekend.
Yeah, well, they only need the two wins to tie the record.
That's right. Yeah, my math is terrible once again. 6 points is all they need.
Yeah, and they've
two
just
wins
been
and a draw
phenomenal this season. So you have to definitely credit Sporting Kansas City for going in there and getting one of the only two wins against that, the only two losses that Atlanta has at home this season. Definitely looking like Sporting's best win of the year. But yeah, I agree with you. I think those last hopes of getting into the Supporter Shield mix again, I think those definitely disappeared this past weekend.
But the idea that that the seeding all still matters from the standpoint they're 1 point ahead of NYCFC when you look over in the Eastern Conference. That's a team that could make a run. And obviously 2 points behind FC Dallas, 1 point ahead of LAFC. These all matter for the standpoint of trying to get a top two seed and getting that first round bye or getting a home playoff game. These games are going to matter massively, I think, for Sporting Kansas City when you take a look at the final five games that they have in 2018, and it starts on Sunday with Real Salt Lake, but you look at their three final home games, Real Salt Lake, they've got LAFC and the LA Galaxy, and not in that order. It's Real Salt Lake, then the Galaxy, then LAFC. Those are three massive home games that if they can get 9 points out of those three games, I think they're going to be in fantastic shape.
Well, yeah, and that's where they'll have to look for sure. You got two away games in the Western Conference as well. A Vancouver team that just fired their coach, and they're fighting for their playoff lives. And you know how tough it is to get to Vancouver to play the game in the first place. So that's a tough road trip for just about any team in MLS that's not in the Pacific Northwest. And then the other one's at FC Dallas. So yeah, you got to look at those three home games, try and pick up maximum points. But what a five game stretch this is down the final five games of the season, all Western Conference opponents. So they finished up their interconference play with this past game against Philadelphia Union, and all teams still fighting for playoff position as well. It's not going to get any easier for Sporting on the way out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you mentioned it, the Vancouver Whitecaps. Announcing today that they have parted ways with Carl Robinson, the head coach for the past several years for the Whitecaps. They're in eighth place right now. They're 4 points out of the playoffs. Look, it was a really disappointing result for them to lose at home to FC Dallas this past weekend, even though that actually furthered Sporting Kansas City's chances of playoff qualification. I think that Sporting Kansas City fans were all rooting for Vancouver in that game because we're looking more at the seeding with FC Dallas, which put FC Dallas back in first place. But, man, that's curious timing by Vancouver. What's the rush to do this now, I guess, is my question when they're in a playoff race right now. This was a playoff team a year ago, and, man, they're not that far away still with five games left in the season.
I don't get the timing, yeah. With five games left, 4 points out. And possibly, you know, they could possibly just be 2 points back of Real Salt Lake because they have a game in hand on RSL. So, you know, you're talking about 1 weekend, and they could be back into the playoffs. And so, I don't get the timing. They promote the academy director to the interim head coach. Does he have a good relationship with Alfonso Davies? From all accounts, it seemed like Carl Robinson had a fine relationship with Davies, and he certainly brought him through in the right manner to, you know, not overuse the kid throughout his early stages of his professional development. And you see that that's paid dividends for Davies and the club with his move to Bayern Munich coming in after this season. So, yeah, I just can't imagine that the head of your academy is going to do a better job over these next five games than Carl Robinson would have.
Alfonso Davies is gone after this season anyway, and it's not like he's playing poorly, so if the idea was we'll light a fire under Alfonso Davies, that doesn't seem to make much sense. Yeah, Stuart Kerr also let go, the goalkeeper coach, so academy technical director Craig...
And the assistant let go as well, not just Kerr.
Martin Pert, so Craig Dalrymple, the academy technical director, will take over. And the quote from Vancouver Whitecaps, quote, "We have a lot of respect and appreciation for Carl and his team and are thankful for the contributions they've made to this club. A lot of thought and consideration has gone into this decision, which was made with the best interest of the club moving forward." So very interesting. Why now instead of maybe after the season's over if he doesn't salvage things and make a playoff run here?
Yeah, I just don't... What are the positives here? Maybe I've seen
unless some, something happened off the, you know, behind
be that,
the scenes
yeah.
that we don't know about. Maybe there's a blow up with the front office or something.
Could be in some relationship issues there. Not sure. I've seen some stuff floating around on Twitter that this is a front office move to deflect blame away from them. Should it come down to that at the end of the season? I just don't see any of the positives from doing it at this point. I don't think you're going to get a leg up on coaching searches with 5 games to go. I mean, maybe you can be sending out emails 4 weeks in advance, but I just can't see any positives to doing this at this particular moment.
Well, there are now 3 teams in the Western Conference who have interim coaches to close out this season. San Jose, their coach got fired right after Sporting Kansas City put them to the sword. The LA Galaxy, whom Sporting Kansas City will play here in a couple of weeks' time, and now the Vancouver Whitecaps, who Sporting Kansas City will play in a couple of weeks' time as well. So very interesting stuff going on in the Western Conference right now.
I got to look at those 3 front offices and really throw some questions out. I mean, the Galaxy, what have they been doing for years now? They should have anticipated LAFC coming in the way that they did, and I don't think they were prepared at all for their new neighbors to come into the league and make such an impact. And even before that, they're once Robbie Keane went and seemed like they just didn't have a plan in terms of the playing staff. San Jose, how do you hire a guy before a season and not even get him a full year to do his job? And then the timing of this Vancouver move and some of the moves that they've made in the past as well. I think a lot of eyebrows should be raised at those 3 respective front offices.
If you're a front office and you hire a guy and fire him before the season's over, you failed in the hiring process.
Definitely.
It's just an admission of failure. Now, sometimes admitting failure is smarter than trying to just keep pushing that rock uphill. But it's certainly something that's going to have you called into the owner's office and say, okay, what's going on here? So I think you're right on all 3 fronts. Hopefully, if you're Sporting Kansas City, something you can take advantage of. But we do know that these are still teams with a wild amount of talent, and now they become kind of wild cards because you don't know what to expect from Vancouver. I think we know what to expect from L.A. a little bit, which is not much defending and a whole lot of Zlatan, and that's going to be coming to Children's Mercy Park, and that is going to be a hell of a show. But first, it's Real Salt Lake, who are in 5th place and in the playoffs as things stand right now, although they've had a couple of frustrating results here back-to-back that we will talk about with Brian Dunseth, and we'll give our thoughts on the game as well. We're going to take a break. More of the Sporting Kansas City show right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB with Brian Dunseth. Welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati, Carter Augustine with you, joined by a good buddy of ours now, a broadcaster both nationally for MLS and for Real Salt Lake, and of course, former national team player and all that, Brian Dunseth, we call him Dunny, joins us on the show today. Dunny, how you doing, man?
I'm good. My socks are inside out. I'm ready to talk to the soccer ball.
I'm in the same spot, man. You got me converted, so we're ready to go. We're comfortable. We got inside-out socks on, and we're ready to talk soccer ball. Tell us about maybe just a thumbnail on where Real Salt Lake are now compared to when Sporting Kansas City saw them a couple of months ago out in Sandy, Utah.
Yeah, I would say healthy, first and foremost. I mean, listen, you guys know the ups and downs. It can be tumultuous at times. And when you lose a couple difference makers, next thing you know, you feel like the world is collapsing around you. And with no true number 9, whether it's been Luis Silva, whether it's been Corey Baird, or now Daimir Krylov playing the number 9 position, it was kind of a rotating cast of characters. But this is it's a confident team coming off wins at Houston, at Colorado, and home against LAFC, but at the same time a frustrated team because they left 2 points on the board against Minnesota United. And unlike Sporting Kansas City in Atlanta, they went in, played their game, played their style, tried to play wide open the way Sporting Kansas City did in Atlanta. But unfortunately for RSL, they couldn't recreate what Peter Vermes and company did down there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. They lost 2-0. It's not even arguably. I just think this is the best team in Major League Soccer right now in Atlanta United.
Donnie, you talk about those 2 recent results, and they come off the back of 2 games in which they scored 6 goals. Was it a case of they got 2 weeks break there between that big 6-2 over the Galaxy and the Minnesota game? Was it a case of stopping the ball rolling there when maybe they didn't want to, or just some different game situations with Minnesota?
Yeah, probably a combination of both, to be quite honest with you. I think realistically, it would be no surprise to anyone if Colorado or the LA Galaxy conceded six goals in any game this season, just based on how porous defensively they've been throughout the course of the year. But it came at a really big moment for RSL because it was one of those moments where they had to separate themselves from the LA Galaxy and give themselves a little bit of equity in the points category in the Western Conference. But, you know, like a lot of teams, it's the blessing and the curse of the international break. Do you want to play through it, potentially missing out on a couple of difference makers? Or do you want that break and that rest to get yourself back and then go in heavy-handed? And unfortunately for RSL, you know, it's a similar story, I think, for Sporting Kansas City at home. Not too many teams want to come in and play them straight up, and RSL hasn't lost a game since the opening game of the season at Rio Tinto Stadium against LAFC. But they've dropped points against San Jose, Colorado, Montreal, and now Minnesota at home. So at times they play to the level of their opponent. They play super high, they play super low. But what has unfortunately been the calling card of this team at times is the inability to find the second goal, find the dagger to put a game away.
We're visiting with Brian Dunseth as Real Salt Lake come to Children's Mercy Park on Sunday. Big rivalry game, 4 o'clock on national television. You can hear the game live on our sister station, 94.5 FM and 1510 AM. You mentioned the good form at home, Dunny, 10-1-4, 3-10-2 away from home. What do you expect to see from Real Salt Lake on the road this time? You mentioned they tried to keep it open against Atlanta. That didn't work out. What should we expect to see on Sunday against Sporting Kansas City?
Yeah, I think, honestly, they tried to recreate it, what they did in Atlanta, because they did have some chances, but listen, they were roundly dominated by maybe what will go down as the most potent attack in the history of Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've tried to replicate Portland on a few occasions, Giovanni Savarese, and playing like a hybrid of a 5-3-2 and kind of this, I guess we're calling it a Christmas tree formation, just to absorb and punch and counterpunch. And I just don't think it fits them. You know, it's a problem that I think 99% of MLS teams have, is they don't have this confidence to play on the road the same way they do at home. And it's just a psychological barrier for some reason. But when they come out and play and they play their style, you know, I think they give themselves a chance. When you look at that record earlier, a lot of those were blowouts. A lot of that, you know, it was really naive decision-making, whether it was Justin Glad or Brooks Lennon or Aaron Herrera or Danny Acosta. You know, you've got four guys on that back line at times that are all starters at the U.S. Under-20 World Cup. So, and then Marcelo Silva missing a big chunk of matches, their Uruguayan defender. So games at times were close. They couldn't find that goal to punish the mistake of their opponent, and then they got stretched, and then they started chasing, and then they started getting blown out. So I think they feel a little bit better, but again, I think it was a big learning lesson from what they saw in Atlanta last weekend.
Dunny, I want to ask you about Demir Krylak. You mentioned him a little bit earlier. Last time Sporting played RSL, it was still jury out on Krylak at that point, but it seems he's in great form. He's got 7 goals in the past month and a half or so. What have you seen from him as his RSL career has kind of grown throughout this season?
Yeah, I think the jury was out because they were still trying to figure out what the responsibilities were, because I think the people looked at him and they said, well, he's just a 6. Well, if you go back to his time at Rijeka, where he was captain, or Union Berlin in the Bundesliga 2, on both occasions, he was more of an 8. He was kind of an in-between late-arriving midfielder into the box. And what it really came down to, guys, is Sonny, the Spanish-Nigerian in the midfielder, the little chihuahua that RSL has. Him coming back into form, him working his way into the starting 11, freed up Daimir. Daimir played higher next to Albert. Albert then was a little bit more free, and that created even more space for Joao Plata and Jefferson Savarino. So it was kind of this trickle-down effect in the midfield. But listen, I got a lot of time for Daimir Krylak. It'll probably go down in the history of Real Salt Lake as the nicest player, generally the nicest player you could ever come across. He's just a really, really good dude, and they knocked it out of the park with him. But again, I think it's a trickle-down effect. I don't think he was 100% comfortable, but I think the team became comfortable with understanding how he, how they could play to his strength. And I think that's why you're seeing so many goals.
Donnie, I want to ask you about a couple more players. You mentioned Sonny and the difference he's made for this team. Can you expand on that a little bit? I mean, how big of a difference is it for RSL when he's in the lineup versus when he's not?
And a range into the midfield that isn't necessarily there because he covers so much ground. I mean, listen, Kyle, you guys know Kyle. You either love Kyle, you hate Kyle. He's kind of RSL's version of Roger Espinosa. You either respect him or you absolutely hate him. There's no in between. but you know, when you put Ilya Sanchez next to Roger, you see an immediate difference. You see a boost as compared to say a Sonny Mostovar. So you know, with Sonny, he runs his tail off. He's constantly agitating opponents. And he's kind of what Ozzie Alonso and Diego Chara is. That's kind of what his role has been for RSL. And I think he alleviates so much of the pressure on Kyle to just be the pure, fully responsible six, to where everyone can kind of be a little bit more focused, a little bit more free-flowing. But he does always toe that line of picking up that second yellow card each and every game.
So the other guy that I wanted to ask you about that elicited some reactions from the Sporting Kansas City fans and broadcasters last time around is the youngster who has a lot of ability, Sebastian Salcedo. I know that you and our buddy Matt Lawrence, who you guys work together with sometimes on your SiriusXM satellite radio duties, we're playfully joking with each other a little bit about. We had been pointing out on the broadcast, it looked like he had some antics against Sporting of, you know, maybe embellishing some things. Graham Zusi clearly got frustrated with that a few different times. But at the same time, he made some really big plays for RSL. I mean, he was a big factor in that win for you guys against Sporting Kansas City. Tell us a little bit more about him and what type of player he is and what kind of impact he makes.
Yeah, I mean, he's a solid player, and unfortunately, he's a young American attacking wide player. And right now, with target allocation money and designated players, he's a guy that, unfortunately is going to be one of these guys that, until he starts statistically showing up at each and every game, it's going to be insanely difficult for him to break past Jeff Reno, who's a designated player, and Joao Plata, who everyone knows is a target allocation money player. I mean, listen, this is also Bofo, who kicked Juan Mata in the friendly last year against Manchester United, and Antonio Valencia walloped him and took a straight red card about 2 minutes later. But, yeah, listen, Bofo's he's a good player. He started three to five games for Cabs Almost in the Under-20 World Cup 2 summers ago. I think he has a phenomenal ability. Like every young American, like I said, it's going to be incredibly difficult for him to find the consistency to be on the field week in, week out.
Well, big news today in the Western Conference. Carl Robinson let go out in Vancouver. They're still in the playoff race, 4 points behind Seattle, 5 behind Real Salt Lake with a game in hand. What do you make sense of in terms of the timing of this decision up in Vancouver?
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't make sense. I think what this must look like is there's been things behind it. You just don't fire a manager that is this close to the playoffs, as well as his staff. I guess promote the academy director into the role, knowing that you're still within touching distance. We all know Vancouver wants to be a big market when in all actuality it's a small market. I was joking with Paul Dolan from the TSN broadcast as well as the radio broadcast about is Vancouver still taken seriously in the Cascadia Cup? Because when you look at what Seattle and Portland are doing, I understand you're talking about Canadian sides and we don't really get to see them week in, week out, but it's a constant rotating cast of characters, and I got a ton of time for Carl Robinson. I think he's one of the best human beings that you can come across in the game, always open and honest and forthcoming. But unfortunately, I don't think was always given everything that he needed to compete for championships. I mean, just look at the last couple of years, getting a Freddie Montero, losing a Freddie Montero, bringing in a Cy Kamara, developing an Alphonso Davies, losing an Alphonso Davies to Bayern Munich at the end of the season, forced to part ways with Tim Parker in the offseason because the club's not going to compensate him the way that he feels he needs to be compensated. So for me, it's a head-scratcher, but it'll be fascinating to hear the trickle-down. And as we all always hear the rumors and the conversations behind the scenes, it'll be pretty enlightening when we find out what the truth looks like.
It'll be interesting to see what that does to the playoff race as well. The playoff race is alive and well for both Real Salt Lake and Sporting Kansas City, so it's a big one on Sunday. Dunny, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thank you, as always.
All right, there's Brian Dunseth. As again, we'll have the game for you on our sister station, 94.5 FM, 1510 AM, Sporting Kansas City, hosting Real Salt Lake. You're looking right now at the standings at second place in the Western Conference and fifth place in the Western Conference, separated by a total of 6 points between Sporting KC on 51 and Real Salt Lake on 45. That means if RSL could come in and steal one from Sporting KC, they would put themselves within just 3 points of Sporting KC. Or if Sporting KC can take care of business, they can pretty much put a complete crowbar separation between themselves and Real Salt Lake, with 4 games left in the schedule. We'll talk more about that. Carter Augustine and I will give you our thoughts on this game that's coming up and the home stretch, which is upon us in 2018 MLS, right after this on the Sporting KC Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, thanks to Brian Dunseth for joining us on the show today as he helps us preview this matchup between Sporting Kansas City and Real Salt Lake. Time to talk some scenarios, Carter Augustine. Because the Sporting KC side can clinch a franchise record 8th straight playoff berth, which we should probably take a moment to just talk about how rare that is and what it actually means to accomplish that in a second. But here are the ways that Sporting Kansas City can punch their ticket still with what would be 4 games remaining after this weekend. First of all, just win the game. If they win the game, they're in the playoffs. It's as simple as that. And we should almost end the conversation right there because that's what the goal is for Sporting KC. Anything less than that will be a disappointment on Sunday. But if Sporting Kansas City settle for a draw against Real Salt Lake on Sunday, then they would also punch a ticket to the playoffs if the LA Galaxy tied the Vancouver Whitecaps on Saturday, the day before, and FC Dallas beats or ties the Portland Timbers on Saturday as well. So we'll know the results of those 2 games going into it. But the bottom line is win and you're in. And look, I think that's all we feel like pretty much a foregone conclusion.
Yep.
I don't want to jinx anything, but Sporting KC would really have to, have bad things happen to not make the playoffs this year.
That would be catastrophic at this point.
Yeah, Nate Silver's got it at like a 99-point-something% chance. But still be nice to know. And the bigger thing, Carter, is that 8 years in a row. All you have to do is look at a team like Toronto FC this year to see how difficult it is to maintain that type of pace, even in a league that, look, a high percentage of the teams make the playoffs. There's also so much parity, it's hard to maintain for 8 years in a row. It's really a special run.
Yeah, it really is. And I think we heard that from Peter Vermes at the start of the year that they didn't want to be a yo-yo club and, up in MLS Cup 1 year and then miss the playoffs a few years after that. And they've been really consistent. And I think the one key thing to take away from that is it hasn't happened over the past couple years, but this Sporting team under Peter Vermes is so tough to beat that you sneak into the playoffs and anything can happen. And they narrowly lost in these games at Seattle, at Portland, who went on to become MLS Cup champions. And then the game last year went to extra time against Houston as well. So they've just been on the precipice. So I think what that makes, what that enlightens even more, illuminates even more, is that it's that home playoff game now. And so I think the countdown to points really at this point, and it's good to say with 5 games remaining that Sporting's pretty much in. Should they not lose the rest of their 5 games, pretty much is the one, I think, scenario that would see them out of the playoffs. But it's time to look at, can they get into the one of those top four seeds? And obviously they'll be shooting for a one or two seed, but I think at the very least they need to make sure that they lock up that home playoff game, because you'll see a few bounces go your way at home more so often than on the road, and we've seen how that's gone over the past couple of years.
Every single point matters. There's an advantage to be gained by every single point that Sporting Kansas City can obtain from here to the finish line, which should make for a lot of really fun soccer. It basically feels like playoff soccer right now.
Well, the tiebreakers last year certainly bear that point out, don't they?
Yeah. And right now, Sporting still have the tiebreaker when it comes to goal differential, but it's only by 4 goals over LAFC now, by the way. So that's not done and dusted either. So we'll watch all those things. A couple of other superlatives that I want to mention. Roger Espinoza making his 250th appearance in all competitions for Sporting KC in that game at Philadelphia, the 7th player in franchise history to do that. So he joins some fantastic company. Obviously, two of his current teammates, Matt Beisler and Graham Zusi, already on that list as well. And as we've got Carter Augustine here, the voice of Swope Park Rangers, the B-side for Sporting KC, what about the run of Haji Berry? He scores again this past weekend in a 1-1 draw with Tulsa Roughnecks. Carter, he scored in 8 straight games for the Rangers.
Yeah, he's on absolute fire. Haji Berry is on fire. It's a record now in the USL, like you said, 8 straight. Unbelievable. If you haven't, I'd go back and watch the goal from the win against San Antonio in midweek. It was a really wonderful goal where he cuts out this reverse pass that no one really sees coming to Tyler Blackwood, who then returns it to him in the box and he smashes it home. He's caught fire here at the tail end of the season when the Swope Park Rangers really needed it. And they get the huge win over San Antonio last week, get a draw on the road this past week, and now they're off for a little bit, but they've got themselves into good position in terms of getting back into the Western Conference playoffs.
Yeah, 2-time Western Conference champs, Swope Park Rangers. So we'll see if they can mount another postseason push as well. But kudos to Haji Berry. 8 goals in the last 8 games for Swope Park Rangers. That's and a USL record.
That's a good goal haul, I think, in any level, really.
Yeah, that's a heck of a run. And maybe some changes afoot for USL as well, Carter Augustine.
Yeah, interesting little development today. The USL announcing that they are going under a new structure. Quote from them, one central brand, 3 leagues, evolving for the future. And so we've seen the USL just expand like crazy over the past year or two, I guess probably 3 years since the MLS quote-unquote B-side started coming into the league. I think the expansion has just gone skyrocketed through the roof, and they've talked about trying to integrate a little bit of promotion relegation within the USL setup. And now that I think they're trying to head in that direction. And it's a rebrand today where they're going to rename the leagues USL Championship, USL League 1, and USL League 2 in the 3 tiers of USL. So bye-bye PDL. That's, shout out to Des Moines Menace. I grew up watching the PDL for sure. Now they'll be USL League 2. But I don't know. Interesting. I like the graphics package. Actually, a guy that used to intern with Sporting, Gus Rachels, is down there doing most of the graphics and stuff for USL now, and he does a fantastic job. I think it's really pretty looking what they've done with their new leagues and logos and graphics and where they're going to go in terms of broadcasting games and such. But I don't know about you. There's something unsettling about just completely stealing the structure from England for naming your leagues like that.
Well, the whole construct in USL is an interesting and challenging one. I guess, as you could say, the world of American soccer is in the first place, but because you have different teams and different organizations trying to accomplish different things when it comes to their USL teams. Some teams like Cincinnati, Nashville, Sacramento are looking at that as a way to set the ground for a possible MLS expansion bid at some point. And that's worked out well for some teams. We've seen, Minnesota United and Orlando City be able to pull off that switch from a lower division professional team to an MLS team. There are other teams, like we said, there are more and more MLS teams with B-sides now that are not looking at this as a standalone organization with bigger designs. They are looking at it as a developmental side. Look, I've made this point to several of the youth coaches that I work around as my kids are playing youth sports these days. Sporting Kansas City under Swope Park Rangers in the first 2 years of the franchise made it to the USL Cup final. And they had a coaching change after each of those years. And we talked about it when Mark Dos Santos was here. That coaching change happened because Peter Vermees's goal is not to win games with Swope Park Rangers. That doesn't mean he doesn't care about winning games. It means it's not his number one priority. His number one priority with Swope Park Rangers is we're playing the system that we play in the academy, that we play at the B side, so that it is all about preparing players to play for the first team. And that could be a player who's injured who needs to get back in shape. That could be a player who's not getting enough minutes with the first team and needs to get minutes. That could be a young player who's coming up through the system and needs to be trained to play in the way that Sporting Kansas City can. But the idea being that then there's that person is transitioned seamlessly into the first team. And that also, though, puts the coach in a position where the personnel he might have at Swope Park Rangers isn't ideally suited for the exact same system. They might not have all of the exact same puzzle pieces the way that Peter Vermees does with the first team. Peter wants you to still play that system, right? That's very different than, say, the approach that Louisville might have going into it if they are looking just to try to win games, put butts in seats, and see if they can turn themselves to an MLS side. And all those things trying to fit in one league, it's just kind of a tricky thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is tricky. And it's been really interesting to see the different teams, and the independent teams versus the B-sides, if you will. And I'm curious to see how that shakes out in terms of this, if they do try and get some type of promotion relegation in among the three leagues that they have starting from next season. So we'll have to see if the Swope Park Rangers will be in the championship if they go down to League One. I'm not sure, so we'll have to keep an ear out for that. But
then do they have the chance to play themselves into the championship from year to year?
Yeah, you wonder. Yeah, what will those rules look like? But I think that's not what today's announcement was detailing. But I think it's the first step towards getting there, certainly. And so, yeah, I'm excited to see where it heads. But certainly, there's been some hemming and hawing about the MLS sides in USL from a lot of USL fans and from teams across the league, but I don't think it's done anything but improve the quality of the league and given more opportunities to players trying to become professionals. So I think a big reason why they have been expanding is because of the MLS involvement. So I don't know how you can complain about it on one hand, but reap the benefits on the other. And as USL fans in general, you've been able to see the likes of Alphonso Davies, Tyler Adams, Aaron Long come through this league. And now, you know, hopefully Sporting fans will see a couple of these kids make it up to big time status with Sporting as well. So I think it's just been a great part of the league, and it's been a big reason why they're now able to do this big announcement that they have today.
Daniel Shalloway spent time with Swope Park Rangers. We're already seeing Gianluca Busio and Juan Cousin and Jalen Lindsay and more players to come. So certainly it's somebody I was speaking to the Arkansas City Rotary Club yesterday, and I was surprised at how many questions I got about Sporting Kansas City and MLS in rural southern Kansas, but I was pleasantly surprised by that. And one of the questions was, why is American soccer so bad? And I said, well, it's not, actually. Yeah. But one of the things that I ended up talking about was the way that players are developed in the United States now, just to compare to 5-6 years ago. We've covered it a million times, but you know, when Matt Beisler was Gianluca Busio's age, he was playing on his club team twice a week in practice at the high school level, and then he still had college development, then pro development all ahead of him. To the point where he wasn't a full-fledged everyday starter at a professional level till he was, 24 to 25 years old. And Gianluca Busio's played 5 games at the MLS level at 16 years old, and Swope Park Rangers plays a vital role in that. I think that it absolutely is massive. That's just one player. You talked about Tyler Adams and all these other guys that are coming through. We just saw Austin Trusty with the Philadelphia Union, and players, they had multiple players on the field that have come through their academy system. And I just think that the more and more we see that, the better the American soccer is going to be for it, from the national team level to the club level.
Yeah, certainly. And hopefully this three-tiered system works out for USL, because they are seeing huge expansion. And so there's going to be a bunch of new markets in the league next year. And I hope that that only increases the opportunities for kids trying to make it as professional soccer players in this country. You know, maybe if they didn't luck out and get into an academy, they can, you know, start somewhere and build their way up. And hopefully this is good news. But yeah, I'm still a little miffed. Maybe they could have gone with Leaders and Legends or something for the division names. I don't know. Just
how's that going so far? Can you keep track of who's in the Leaders and Legends division in your conference?
Those are gone. So
they are. What are they now?
East and West now.
Oh,
so
East and West.
Yeah. So
it's a little more sense.
Leaders and Legends is open. You can have it.
Take it back now.
Yeah, you could take it.
Well, the ACC. What are they? The Atlantic Division and the Coastal Division.
I don't even know
what that means. Yeah. I don't know who's in what division there.
What's the difference between Atlantic and Coastal?
What is the Atlantic? I guess it's an ocean right there on the coast, but it confuses me.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But no, they went British Championship.
They went British.
League One, League Two.
It is disappointing. Opportunity lost, as Carter says. All right, when we come back, we'll take a look at this matchup for Sporting KC on Sunday with Real Salt Lake right after this, as we wrap things up on the Sporting Kansas City Show. And we're back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. Nate Bucati along with Carter Augustine. Our thanks to Brian Dunseth for joining us on the show today as we get ready for a big game on Sunday, 4 o'clock at Children's Mercy Park. It is Childhood Cancer Awareness Day at Children's Mercy Park as well, which is always a special day, Carter Augustine. It should be a lot of fun, and you and I are going to have a special guest up in the booth at halftime as we do grant one of our sporting wishes to a young person battling cancer who wanted to be a Sporting Kansas City player for a day, which I think is incredibly cool.
Yeah, that's really cool, and I think it's one of the coolest things that this club does and how they've stayed so involved with these type of initiatives, and shout out to Brandy Thomas for, you know, really spearheading a lot of those efforts with the Victory Project.
The Victory Project?
It could be the Victory Project, considering how much work Brandy's put into it over these years. But love the Victory Project and what they do. And so no surprise that there's a little bit extra on top of the MLS-wide Childhood Cancer Awareness Day here from Sporting Kansas City. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that aspect of the game. And really, the Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, I think, is really awesome from MLS, and you get all the gold gear. And I know that you can go bid on a lot of these items. They'll be up for sale, I think, towards the end of October is when they start to put all that stuff up for auction. So make sure you keep your eyes out for that and the ability to bid on unique merchandise from each of the teams around the league in relation to childhood cancer, and it all goes to a really good cause. So yeah, I really like that for this weekend too.
If you want to find out information, just go to victorykc.org. That's the website for the Victory Project, which is just a fantastic place. Now, onto the game. I don't know about you, Carter. I was a little surprised to hear Dunny say that he thinks Real Salt Lake's going to come in to Children's Mercy Park and try to play an open game like they did in Atlanta. I think there's a little implication there from Dunny that maybe they're not as intimidated by Sporting Kansas City as if they weren't afraid to do it in Atlanta. Why would they be afraid to do it here when Atlanta's the most explosive team in MLS? We just haven't seen that from RSL. Most times when they come here, they try to bog things down, slow it down as much as possible, frustrate Sporting Kansas City and go that route. And I got to be honest with you, if they decide they want to come play an open match, I think I would welcome that if I'm a Sporting Kansas City fan, and I think Sporting Kansas City would be in great shape to take advantage of that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Denny's probably spot on. They've got that attacking quartet that likes to get out and go. So, you know, I think they will be pretty open. And you look at the goals that they concede; it's the most in the playoff hunt or in the playoff positions. They haven't conceded as many as the Galaxy or Vancouver, but in the top six, they've conceded the most goals. And I think they can be got at in the back, and I think that they trust that their attacking four will do some damage up top. So yeah, I could see it being pretty wide open. It was certainly wide open in Salt Lake, and that game was pretty heated as well. So maybe that helped renew this rivalry a little bit, considering some of the key players have moved on over the past few years. But I think that feisty encounter back on the 4th of July will help this game a little bit as well.
All right, that's going to do it for us. We appreciate, again, Brian Dunseth for joining us on the show today. Tune in on Sunday to our sister station, 94.5 FM and 1510 AM. Sporting KC will take on Real Salt Lake 4 o'clock at Children's Mercy Park. Of course, get your tickets as well at sportingkc.com or on SeatGeek. We will see you next week on the Sporting Kansas City Show.